Well, I participated in that that one little venture to take a whole reconstruction house, something built right at the end of World War II by a carpetbagger. Not World War II, the Civil War, by a carpetbagger. And but then I had no sense of how to start any place else, so I went back to Temple Cotton Oil after a brief time. I'd taken my accumulated terminal leave and a couple of more months, and went back to work for Temple Cotton Oil, at which time I was charged principally with collecting a lot of receivables. Part of the mismanagement of the company was that this small company that was capitalized at about $1 million had receivables of somewhere around $600,000 or $800,000, which were slow. And the parent company, that is Southern Pine, had pumped money into it over the years. So I proceeded with that and was pretty successful, and I don't remember everything that happened along then, but at one time Jimmy Webb had never forgotten that I wrote that particular letter, and I was did consult with Uncle Arthur from time to time about the business. I'd go down regularly and talk to him, and at one time then Jimmy Webb said that if I stayed in the company, then he was leaving, and my Uncle Arthur, bless his heart, said, well, we're keeping Latney. And that was wise from the company's point of view, too, because the way Jimmy Webb kept the books, he hadn't taken depreciation, for instance, over the life of the company. Yeah. Well, I did collect, did get all of our receivables, notes and accounts receivable in good shape, reorganized, started and wrote down properties, got rid of bad properties, and got down to a company which had a sound value of about $200,000, which had been shown on the books as being about $1,250,000. This was back in the 40s, of course, and those figures don't sound very big now, but they were. So after getting it back, and we were competing with great national companies like Armour and Swift and Procter and Gamble, which were out of our league. But anyway, it was a small company. I made a small company of it, and we produced a profit each year after that, until it became apparent that the industry had moved away from us. We had an old method of manufacture which had been replaced by new technology, and our so-called territory was not close to where the real production was. So I recommended that we liquidate it, and when we did liquidate it, well, we recovered most of what its book value was, but of course it had been owned for 30 years and it never produced any profit. When that time came, I was offered a job with and I liquidated it successfully. When that time came, I was offered a job with Olin Matheson Company, who manufactures of fertilizer and chemical company, but they're fertilizer division. Mm-hmm. And I must add here that we had a small fertilizer mixing plant where we mixed the components of commercial fertilizer and sold them in the spring of the year. Well, I must confess that in my entire business career, I never had any serious idea of working for anybody else. Not so much a matter of loyalty as it was just a matter of not being able to leave the family tit, I guess. I told Arthur, who was by then head of our Southern Pine Lumber Company, that I had this offer, and if he wanted me to stay in the company, to let me know, which he did. And I went to Diboll then. Well, I was pretty independent, actually, because I had the security of being family. And I was made general sales manager. Temple Weber Sr. had been general sales manager, and I took that job on, but I didn't handle it in any respect like him. He would sit at his desk and talk to the different salesmen around the country and would have a stock sheet knowing what we had, and he would largely set the prices according to what the competition was. I revamped it to suit me, and I'm fairly confident that Arthur and Temple were both tolerant of me. But I had good people, and I put good people in charge of every part of it. Somebody in charge of the Southern Pine sales, someone in charge of hardwood sales. We already had them. Someone in charge of treated material sales, someone in charge of toilet seat sales, and so forth. And I oversaw them, but I didn't do the nitty-gritty. I carved out for myself something that was a sublimation of what I consider my talents to be, or my inclinations to be, which are acting and the arts, so that I've concerned myself with advertising, with customer relations, with public relations, with the company image, and with, to a large degree, employee relations. And worked at Diboll in that fashion until 1960. I went there, and actually it was January of 1953 when I went there, and was there until 60. My father had been responsible for getting my grandfather to go into the retail lumber business, and it started with a yard in Houston. I was very largely motivated in my being in the company by the desire to somehow or another vindicate my father, or to erase his image of the prodigal, and to somehow or another restore my line in the company. However, he had thrown most of his money away by the time he died, and his branch's share was only a small fraction of what I was able to get him to, in the year before he died, to put in trust. A small amount compared to the others. So I frankly always felt that I was sitting at the second table as far as when it came to governing the company, and felt really that I was largely at the sufferance of the others. I was pretty assertive in every respect, and Arthur's prime supporter in all matters having to do with the company and at the board meetings. I don't know that he particularly appreciated that, because he didn't need me particularly as his echo. But when the man who was running the retail division, which by that time was 38 retail lumber yards spread all over Texas, and in a manner which was already archaic, Arthur and Temple decided to make me head of the retail. I'd had this success in
of
the
all of them?
Yes, I was be general manager. Well, I went in, and in the time that I was there, we made it a separate corporation and a subsidiary of Southern Pine Lumber Company, and I tried to. It was my intent to modernize it. to put in new merchandising methods to analyze the different types of sales we had and to incorporate some of the new techniques of distribution yards and that sort of thing. We had some very successful yards, and most of the yards were not paying any return on the capital to any extent. I went too fast, and in later analysis, this may be rationalization, but I don't think so. When I hit there, it was my idea to perform a miracle, to reorganize this company and make a successful 20th century company of it and get out. I wanted to train somebody under me who was capable of taking it over, and when it was producing as it should, to be able to walk away. Mm-hmm. Well, this was I realize I've been motivated, unconsciously motivated, ever since I graduated from the University of Texas to go through this and to come out on the other side where I could do my own thing. This turned out to be a debacle for several reasons. One is that I entrusted my subordinates, my immediate subordinates, and believed what they would tell me, which didn't turn out to be true. It was a little bit like the emperor's clothes, and I allowed myself to believe it. And furthermore, I tried to put in a new accounting system. Well, we were doing so much and making so many changes, and then trying to put in this new accounting system, actually, the company got out of control. We didn't know, I wouldn't know until the 1st of September what our July results were, maybe. And by the time we finally came to a screeching halt, I'd expanded a lot and had acquired some other yards, I went in 60, sort of officially it began in 61, but I took over in the middle of 60, and my family followed me down in 61. When it finally came to a place where something had to be done, and Arthur came down to Houston and said that we were going to close yards and clean up the mess, and that I had a choice of going back to Diboll if I wanted to. And I said, well, I didn't hesitate a minute. I said I'm ready to resign. This was easy for me because it was really where I'd been going, except the story that Adlai Stevenson tells, told when he was defeated running for president. He told a story that Abraham Lincoln told when he was defeated one time. He said, I feel like the man who was ridden out, tarred and feathered, and ridden out of town on a rail. He said that if it weren't for the honor of it, he would rather have just walked out of town. Well, I got out, and that was really where I'd been aiming for, but I'd rather have gotten out another way. Arthur, with great compassion, though, at that time, said that he envied me because now I was free to do what I wanted to do, but as long as you keep on winning, you have to keep on playing. If you succeed at one job, well, then you advance to another one.
It's like what happened in the war.
When
you were in a position that you were doing so well, you knew you were going to be out there in the front of everything.
Well, it was the opposite of that, really. In the sense there that I was doing what I was supposed to do there, well, I was going to stay there until I got killed. And this one, if I had brought it off, well, then I would have been successful in expanding that company or taking on new responsibilities. Mm-hmm. I've forgotten that law that people speak of, but it's the law that somebody's name
isn't
is
it Murphy's Law?
Murphy's Law, that you keep on getting promoted until you get in a job you can't handle, and then you get fired.
Yeah.
Well, that is a very quick sketch of it. Bill Bass, I had one man that I expected to be my successor. His name was Bert Wolford, but he made some bad mistakes. He was the district manager of our most important districts. One of the things I did was to set up districts and have district managers have regular meetings and so forth. And then this Bill Bass came along. He was the fellow in the emperor's clothes. He could convince me of anything, and he told me all the things that we're doing and everything. But it was around his activities with a big concentration yard in Houston, and with some apartments that we supplied came crashing down. The promoters, the owners, were living out of the interim loans, and riding high, and it all finally came to a head. And that's when I got out. I became wrong-headed down there too. It's been hard for a lot of people to work under Arthur, not because he's not fair and good, but because they expect to emulate him. And what many of us have done is emulate his style and his boldness, but his apparent boldness, but haven't had his genius for these things, nor his energy. One of the qualities Arthur has is his tremendous nervous energy. Bert Walford, the fellow that I said that I was hoping would be able to take my place real soon, I went much too fast, hoping to, if I'd taken 1 yard at a time and had applied my ideas, and my ideas were all good ideas, but I didn't have control. That's the whole key to the thing. I didn't have financial control. Mm-hmm. But if I'd taken 1 yard and made it a model, and then one more, but I tried to do all of them. Well, personnel engineer, I think is what he called himself, came in one time, and he stayed with me until I agreed to let him examine what I call my headquarters staff, of which Bert was one. And he came to me afterwards, and he said, "I know how much you think of Bert, but I have to tell you something about him." He said that most people would class him as lazy, but in effect, he has a low energy level. Well, it turned out that Bert wasn't handling his job as he should, and I did discharge him. But I've never forgotten that about energy levels. My energy level is about medium, not over medium, because I remember when some blow would hit me where someone would come in and say that we'd taken a $50,000 loss on something. Well, I would by that time have put so much of my energy into things that when the blow came, well, all I could do was just go home and have a drink of booze. Arthur, in contrast to that, is the kind who is like a boxer who gets up off the canvas and wins a fight. He's never at his so much at his best, except when he's got a real problem. I'd see that in the company. He'd be bored to death until one of his divisions would falter, and then he would throw himself into it and rebuild it do whatever's necessary. So,
did you go through a bad period of feeling you had let the family down?
Yes, a totally bad feeling, and it's still, I have this, I don't feel bad about my marriage because I felt that was, I did my best in that, and we came out on the other side in some way with a fine family and with being friends and everything. I feel bad about the war, but it's nobody will know how pained I am when I go to Die Ball and realize it and reflect on any of the of that career and I wake up at night grieving over it. Mm. Because it was a debacle, when I went to Houston, I was smart in Arkansas because I sort of observed and emulated old country traders who always tried to act dumber than they were rather than smarter than they were. Mm-hmm. And they weren't afraid to say, well, would you run that by me again? I don't believe I understand. I'm not real smart, so you have to take me through it real.
I think your acting ability probably helped out there.
Well, that was good up in Arkansas, but when I got down, got in Houston, well, I was a big shot with two martinis at lunch, you know, and taking people out to lunch and making these big plans and playing the role rather than staying as close to things as I should have. So we did big things. I had district managers and we had district meetings and we analyzed the business and classed the types of sales. In retail and regular lumber sales and construction and home remodeling and all these things with certain goals and targets, and we had our projections and then our actual to go by. But our figures got so far behind that, and I've even at the end, I was thinking that we were on our course. So that, in effect, I guess, is all. I did talk through it pretty fast. I may have left a.
Well, Brenda said I should mention the name of a Mr. Van Zandt and ask if you would feel like talking about a business problem that came up with him.
Well, there was never a business problem with Van Zandt. He was my roommate at the University of Texas, and he was my closest friend. And I always felt that we could go to each other with anything that where we needed. When we got out of Texas, I went to Temple Cotton Oil Company, and he went to work in Gulf Oil as a scout. Going around checking on oil fields. They're kind of open spies on what's going on, what depth the competition is drilling and what their results showed at all the depths and things. And we continued as close friends. I married and then he married. I don't know, maybe he married first. It doesn't make any difference. And we stayed close. He volunteered for the Marines and went in had with an automatic commission. Well, this was something that he sort of was getting ahead of me a little bit on that. He wound up though in a nice soft work as a general's aide in. One time when I was in combat and the mail came up, he sent me a picture of him sitting by a pool, I think, with a nurse in Honolulu. And later on, he was aide to a general in Chile, I believe. But anyway, then we got out of service, and he used his GI Bill to get his law degree. Practiced for a while, and then went back to Gulf. And then by this time I was down in Houston, I guess. But anyway, I was Southern Pine. He was rising very fast in Gulf, and was in the London office and was negotiating some big deals in Europe and Africa. When he decided he's away from his home too much, his next move was going to be to Pittsburgh. That seems to have been at that time heaven for people in Gulf Oil. That's where the head offices were, the Mellon Company, and the Mellons were founders of Gulf. But he decided to come back to Texas, because he's gone from his family so much, and he went back to Fort Worth. But he was at loose ends then, and I offered him a job under me. It might have been very, very good if he had taken it, because maybe the two of us would have done a better job. He might have made me more realistic than I was, because there were people who were saying things that you were trusting these people too much. But anyway, I was there for him, and he decided to go on, and he wound up being a vice president at Fort Worth National Bank, and they're fair-haired man, but again, he stopped them from advancing him anymore. But all that background is to say that he and I were best friends. But when my roof fell in on me, I went to see him, and his response was absolutely the opposite of what I wanted and needed, and he did terrible penance for it. But when I went up there, for some reason he was almost too busy to talk to me. We didn't get to talk about it. And he let me leave under my own steam and wrote me a letter that in effect was, quit feeling sorry for yourself, get off your ass and go to work. Well, that actually just completely, I haven't pretended, I haven't felt vengeful, I haven't felt hatred. But it just pinched the bud of our relationship, and subsequent to that he wrote a book and dedicated it to me. He was a writer. He wrote one book that was fairly successful, and this one that he dedicated to me, I don't think had much of a vogue, and wrote letters. My response was, I don't forgive you because there's nothing to forgive, but that's it's just that. And he died not long after that. I'm sure that was part of his grief, but his father had died fairly young too. So that's all there is about Van Zandt. But he was my, of all people in the world, he was my dearest friend, and that the curtain fell. So have you got some other questions?
I do, if you finished telling the things that you said several weeks ago you wanted to get off the chair.
Yeah, those two primarily, of the war and the company, and actually having stated them, well, they don't. It's been very, I hate to use the term, it's been very therapeutic to get them out and over with.
You know, that it's been my experience too, and I hear from a lot of other people that when things are inside, they seem much bigger. And when they're out there, they may be the exact same size, but somehow the proportion is different if they're in a public domain, you know.
Yeah.
Something. It's a mystery.
I do have a great feeling of guilt about the war because I've been in combat. My platoon turned over more than once as far as casualties concerned, while the other platoons didn't have half the casualties, and that was because I was carrying out the assignments. I'm talking about the my men killed and wounded. But I feel very bad when people know